All right, welcome in, welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM radio here in College Park. I'm your host, Jack Wynn. You're listening to Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show of the week. We've got a little bit of a different schedule today. You know, we're on a Wednesday instead of our normal Tuesday spot. Filling in a little bit today, had some stuff come up, but that's all right. There's been so much sports news happening. We've had some historic moments in the NBA. NFL free agency has been going crazy. Maryland just now losing in the Big Ten tournament. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm excited. So we're going to get right into it, starting with Maryland basketball. And that game is wrapping up as we speak. There's about 45 seconds left. The Terps are down by double digits. Unless they're able to pull off a miracle comeback, it does seem like the season is going to be wrapping up for them. So I want to take a moment, reflect on what the year has been like, because I am proud of this Terps team. This was one of the worst starts to the season in college history, like in our college's history, flatly. They were terrible. They won two Big Ten games for the first few months of the year. It was sloppy. It was turnovers all the time. It was just very bad basketball. At one point, Maryland was the lowest ranked team out of all five power conferences. That's crazy. And it shows how far away they were to start the year. And then, in February, things started to shift. Coach Buzz Williams implemented his fundamental February mantra, which is where the team took a step back, focused on the fundamentals, you know, the basics of the game. Don't turn the ball over. Take better shots. Move the ball around. Play together as a team. Things that really great teams do well and really bad teams do poorly or often neglect. So Maryland started to pull that together, started to figure stuff out. And they started to play better. They won a few games they weren't supposed to win. They were competing with teams they weren't supposed to hang with. So all of a sudden, Maryland started playing better. And now you get to the Big Ten tournament, you have a game against Oregon, and they came out really hot, held Oregon to 12 points in the first half, won by 10, had five guys scoring double digits, that's team basketball, and just overall, this is real improvement from what we saw at the beginning of the year. Obviously, the season as a whole was underwhelming and a bit of a disappointment for Buzz Williams' first season with the Terps, but there is a lot to like and a lot to take away going into next year, specifically those younger guys and the freshmen who are going to be coming back. Being able to have Andre Mills returning, playing at the level he's been at, Darius Adams hopefully taking a step up. He had a really rough game today, but you know, you learn and progress through it. But this Iowa game, as it just officially ended 75-64, was unfortunate. Maryland hung with them for a while, but then Iowa pulled away and they weren't able to get back. So, solid season from the Terps, really underwhelming. Solid end to the season, I mean. Not a solid season by any means. I think they tied their most losses in program history. But my point is there are positive takeaways. As bad as the year was and as much went wrong, there are things to like and things to take into next year. All right. So that's the Big Ten tournament. Iowa's headed to Ohio State, take on the number 8 seed. We will see how that plays out. The winner of that game will play Michigan, and then the tournament will continue to unfold from there. But the Terps have work to do. Buzz has a full offseason now. He's got a full transfer. He's got access to the full transfer portal. You know, he came to Maryland a little later into the offseason last year because stuff in the transfer portal started to open. Recruiting had started well before he got there, so he was a little behind the eight ball just by default, and now he's got a chance to actually get ahead of the game. So I do think Maryland's going to be better next year. I think they'll be competitive if they're able to get back to the level they were at last year before Coach Willard abandoned the team. Is a different question. Okay. Moving on. We have got to talk about Bam Adebayo last night. And he scored 83 points against the Wizards, the second most points in a game in NBA history, past Kobe Bryant's famous game against the Raptors, just behind Wilt's famous game, scoring 100 against the Knicks. And I mean, it was just a tour de force. It was an unbelievable performance from Bam. And we can talk about the way he scored the points, but before we do, you just have to acknowledge the history. Being able to play at that high of a level for the entire game and just dominating a team is incredibly impressive. And for Bam Adebayo, who in my opinion has been one of the most underrated players in the NBA for the last few years, I'm really happy for him. He has been a staple of this Heat franchise. The Heat have made two NBA finals with Bam. He's been one of the best defenders in the league for a half decade now. He's incredibly versatile. He's strong. He's athletic. He's a great player. He doesn't often get the credit and respect that he deserves. And now he's finally getting, you know, some love from the league because of what he's done. So the Heat destroyed the Wizards because of what Bam did. And now we get to have the conversation about the ethics of this performance. So people are saying that the way Bam got to 83 was unfair. He stayed in the game much longer than he needed to. His teammates were fouling the other team just to get an extra possession. And 40 of his points came from free throws. But if you really love the NBA, and if you really love basketball, this shouldn't matter to you. It's not Bam's fault that the Wizards are terrible. It's not Bam's fault that there was nobody on that team who could stop him without fouling. If you're a player, and every single time you drive inside, the other team's going to foul you and send you to the free throw line, do it every time. And that's exactly what Bam did. He had 31 points in the first quarter, by the way, guys. It's not like all of this came at the end. He had 50. He had 40 at halftime. He had 62 through three quarters. It's just, it was a well-rounded performance, and it was a dominating performance. Dunks and ones, threes. When we're not used to seeing Bam hit threes, he hit seven threes. Not to mention, shooting that well from the free throw line is incredibly impressive for a center. So, people don't like the performance. People are going to say that he should have come out of the game. People are saying that he should have just gotten his points through the flow, and if he didn't pass Kobe, that's fine. But when you're chasing history and you're having a historic night, it is absolutely fair to go after it. When Bam was playing as well as he was, what obligation does he have to just pull himself out for no reason? He was, by the way, almost all the Heat's best players were out last night. He was the only guy really on the floor who was a consistent star for them. And so, of course, they're going to feed him the ball. And by the way, Kobe Bryant, they were up by almost 20 points with a few minutes left. He took 7 free throws for the last 3 minutes of the game. He was the only Laker to even take a shot down that stretch, and the game was over. So Kobe was doing the same thing. Wilt did it in a loss. He got blown out. And so, if you want to talk about Wilt, or if you want to talk about Bam, you know, doing it unfairly and chasing it when maybe he shouldn't have, I don't really want to hear it. Because that's what Wilt did. That's what Kobe did. When you're dominating and you're great, you have an obligation to dominate and be great as much as you possibly can. Do you think Kobe would have wanted Bam to come out? I don't think so. I think Kobe would have wanted to chase history. Meanwhile, for the Heat, it was a good win. And for a Miami team that was struggling a lot early on, has recently hit a bit of a stride at one point and has been a little all over the place, it's just clear that they have a ceiling. And for Miami's a team that is just so often coming up short in the playoffs because they fail to operate the right way in free agency and in the offseason. Every year we talk about who are the Heat trading for, who are the Heat acquiring, who are they going to pair with Bam, and nothing ever actually ends up happening. So Bam's a great player. I told you he's underrated. If Miami's going to take advantage of his skill and try to maximize this window that they have, they're going to need to make some moves. Meanwhile, on the flip side for the Wizards, I mean, just a continuation of what's been an abysmal year. This has been an extended tank job, and you hope it ends soon. But for Washington, there's just so many issues on this roster. They're so young as well, and they're still developing. Alex Saar is a talented player. He could not stop that. He needs to work on his defense. He needs to work on his playmaking, some of the fundamental stuff. A couple of the other guys, Bub Carrington, Keyonte George, these are all good pieces. Maybe when you bring in Trae Young, you bring in Anthony Davis, now it starts coming together like a team, but I don't think that they're those two guys away from winning a title. I think that the Wizards have work to do, and right now they're just trying to stay at the bottom of the league in the standings because they just want the first pick, and you know they're thinking about next year. That's why they're letting guys drop 83 on them. So we hit college basketball. We hit the NBA. Now we're going to move to... Oh, real quick, before we move on, something about that game last night. For the first time since he signed with the Wizards, former Maryland player Julian Reese did not play in the game. And of course, Bam drops 83. So am I saying that Juju Reese could have stopped Bam? No. Am I saying it would have been interesting to see him try? Yeah, of course. Okay. We are going to move now to the NFL, and we're going to talk about the other greatly significant news that happened this past weekend. So, on Friday, Max Crosby was reportedly traded from the Las Vegas Raiders to the Baltimore Ravens in exchange for 2 first-round picks. Now, this was a huge trade for a lot of reasons. First of all, Crosby has been a franchise player in Las Vegas for a minute now. He's been one of the best defenders in the league. He's been one of the leaders and one of the best players in general on that team. And he is now being moved. It's a symbol of the Raiders' rebuild and the direction that they're taking this team now that they have the first pick and they're rebuilding a bit. But they were going to move on from Max Crosby, move on from all of the money he was making, and start to really build up this franchise, which is a good idea. It's what a lot of teams do with great players when the timeline just isn't working out. And for Baltimore, acquiring a superstar edge rusher to pair with a defense that had struggled in big spots and to get stops and to pressure the quarterback was going to be great. And it was going to be really helpful, and I felt that it was going to bring that defense back and turn things around for them a bunch. Adding a superstar like that is a big deal. However, yesterday, the news came out that the Ravens were reneging on this trade and were withdrawing. And I'm here to tell you that there's something wrong with this. Something deeply wrong. Because I think that Baltimore had a little dirty play here. Let me explain what happened. So Max Crosby had an injury at the end of the year, and he required surgery on it, and his recovery was going well, but there were some concerns. Now, naturally, the Ravens did their due diligence before making the trade, but once they acquired Max Crosby, he failed his physical on a couple technicalities because, of course, he's recovering from the surgery that he had. It's not anything about him or the fact that he can't sustain it. It's just he's still in recovery. You can't pass a physical right after surgery. So the trade gets clipped. And now, 2 days into free agency, when the Raiders had already been spending the money they thought was off their books because Crosby was off their team, now all of a sudden he's back. They thought they had an extra first-round pick to work with this semester, or this draft. Now they don't. They thought they were moving into a new era of this franchise. Now they may not be. Clearly, at this point, you still have to trade Max Crosby. But the evil genius of what the Ravens did is they're going to get pennies on the dollar for him now. You acquire 2 first-round picks from a team for a guy, and now all of a sudden the trade gets canceled. Everybody knows what the asking price is. There's no leverage. They know there are injury concerns. And what could have been a really solid and promising trade for the future of the Las Vegas Raiders franchise is now really coming back to haunt them and bite them. And I just feel terribly. As I mentioned, I do still expect Crosby to be traded. He'll still go for at least one first. I don't know what the rest of the trade will look like. But this Raiders team is in a pickle. And they've been making really solid moves, by the way. I absolutely love the Tyler Linderbaum signing. I thought that's going to be really helpful. He's a smart player. He's a captain on the offensive line. And when they draft their rookie quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, you need to protect him. They had one of the worst offensive lines in the league. And now you add somebody like Linderbaum, who's going to be in the center of the line. He's going to be reading the defense, communicating with the rest of the offensive line, communicating with Mendoza. It's going to be really helpful. They've made some big signings on defense. They've brought in a receiver. I think the Raiders are doing things right. It's not their fault the Ravens are backing out. I hope they're able to turn things around and still maintain it. Now for the Ravens, I mean, this situation is kind of unbelievable. So the Max Crosby trade, it would have been really helpful for them, but it really didn't make a ton of sense for the future because they've lost a lot of starters this offseason. They've lost a lot of pieces. They had a couple of key guys get banged up. Lamar has had some offseason things going on. They brought in a new defensive-minded coach. They're restructuring things. But they struggled a lot last year. It was a roster that was depleted. They haven't added a lot of guys. And now they were going to be giving up two first-round picks. So I do think they're better off now, especially, by the way, that they turned around and signed Trey Hendrickson, who was the superstar edge rusher for the Bengals, who is an active free agent. So for Baltimore, they're still getting their superstar edge rusher. They're keeping their first round picks, and now they're kind of taking a step back. So it's going to be interesting to see how Baltimore plays this year, what kind of style they run on offense, on defense, everything, how Jesse Minter changes the culture of this team, the progress Lamar takes as he comes back. But I don't know. I thought this was an unbelievable thing to have happen. And for an NFL team to operate that way is fascinating. And it irks me. You know, you see all this news come in. There's a certain integrity to free agency that is lacked consistently. And let me explain what I mean by that. The rules are, you're not allowed to start signing any free agents or negotiate with them until the legal tampering period begins, which is on a certain day. It was last week. And that's how it works. The thing is, every time that this period starts where they're allowed to start negotiating, within 2 minutes, we're getting news that X player has signed, Y player has signed, Z player has been traded. And it's obvious that they've been negotiating and planning this for a long period of time. So for Baltimore to plan all of this stuff out, make this trade, which was probably discussed before the period started, made before free agency, both teams spent money that they accounted for the Crosby contract, and now both teams have to scrap it and readjust. It's just a really terrible spot to be in. We'll see how they're able to recover. I'm cheering for the Raiders. I would love to see Mendoza turn things around. I wonder where they're going to trade Max Crosby. People are talking about the Patriots. The rumors are Tom Brady doesn't want to send him back to New England. Teams like Buffalo are making moves. The Bengals may want to do something now that Hendrickson is gone. I'm not sure. But the fact that you make a deal and renege on it is just very surprising. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to recap everything else that's been happening in this free agency when we come back. There's been a lot of news. Then we're going to the NBA. We're talking about the World Baseball Classic at the end of the show. It's been a big week. We'll be right back with you after this break.
Speech problems.
Who's got them? If you're worried about that class presentation, come on down to the Oral Communication Center, or OCC for short. We offer support for students who need help with their communication and public speaking skills. We're based in the Skinner Building in room 2117 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But if you need a little help in the afternoon, we're in McKeldin Library room 2111 after 4 p.m. Go to umd.mywconline.net to schedule an appointment, but walk-ins are always welcome. See you there.
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November. The Campus Pantry.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean On Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
All right, welcome back in, folks. If you're just tuning in, I'm Jack Way, and you're listening to Winning Time here on WMUC FM radio out of College Park. And we're going to do our free agency recap. We're almost halfway through our show. We covered the entirety of the Maryland basketball season. We talked about Bam Adebayo's historic scoring night last night. And we talked about the dishonor of the Ravens in the reneging on the Max Crosby trade. Now we turn our attention to the rest of the NFL. And we analyze the biggest moves and the biggest headlines that have been made. Normally, in this kind of instance, I would do a segment that I like to call high-speed headlines, where we just run through as much as we can. But I kind of want to take a minute on some of these, so we're going to go through my favorite signings or my favorite moves and explain why I think they're significant and why they should matter. So the first big news from this week is that Travis Kelce is returning to the Kansas City Chiefs. And this should obviously be exciting. He's one of the biggest faces in the NFL. He's one of the most well-known players. He's one of the greatest tight ends of all time. He's a captain on this Chiefs team. And it's good for the league for him to be back. To be honest, I was surprised because he's kind of been gradually declining over the last year or two. So I didn't think that he had one more year in him, especially when he's been so, you know, involved in the world outside of football with his relationship to Taylor Swift, with his marketing and his endorsements that have come up, with his podcasts. But he's back. And I assume this will motivate Patrick Mahomes, get him back a little sooner, get the rest of this Chiefs team to buy in once again, because it does feel a bit to a degree like the Chiefs are going through a soft rebuild. They're having issues with the receiving core. They're moving their running backs around. They're cutting and drafting new offensive linemen. They just traded Trent McDuffie, one of the best cornerbacks in the league, to the Rams because they wanted to get the contract off the books and kind of refresh a bit. So it's interesting moves by the Chiefs. I think they've proven at this point that they have one of the best front offices in the league. But having Kelce back is just going to be great for the culture and great for the team as a whole. I think that Kelce's going to be decent. I don't think he's going to be much better than he was last year, to be frank. He had a couple of good games in spots. He only had about 850 yards, only 5 touchdowns, 76 catches in 17 games. Not the Travis Kelce we're used to seeing, not the Travis Kelce that was able to accumulate 7 or 8 1,000-yard seasons in a row, that has some of the best seasons by a tight end in NFL history. So if he's back, I expect him to be a little up and down. I expect the Chiefs to make moves looking for tight ends. And really what I think the question is what this means for the Chiefs' offense. And I don't think it means much. I think what means the most for them is Patrick Mahomes' health. The question, of course, surrounding them is Mahomes going to be back in time? But what Kelce coming back tells me is that I think that Patrick Mahomes is more likely to come back sooner. Because I think if Mahomes is going to be out for most or half the season next year, Kelce wouldn't want to do this. He loves football, but I don't think he would want to come and run it back for a team that's going to be terrible and without his partner in crime. So I do expect Mahomes to be back earlier, which means the Chiefs' offense is going to be lethal. Because when you have the most lethal quarterback of all time, that's how it goes. It'll be interesting to see how it changes with the injury, how their receivers pan out with the legal issues with Rashee Rice. If they draft somebody, maybe Tyreek Hill ends up going back to the Chiefs. That's been something that's been rumored for a while now. But I think we can expect the Chiefs to be competitive again, to play at a high level. And Kelce coming back is going to be a reason why. Some other news on the quarterback end and in the NFL. While Kelce may be returning in Miami, Tua Tagovailoa is being cut and is leaving. And this makes sense naturally. And I have two things to talk about on this one. The first one is that I feel badly for Tua. And that his career is underwhelming and a little sad. If you remember, back when he was in college at Alabama, he was one of the most well-known and popular prospects. He was supposed to be one of the first picks before Joe Burrow leaped everybody with the greatest season of all time. But Tua was still highly rated, and the Dolphins took a risk on him, and he struggled at first, but then he started to come around, and all of a sudden, Tua developed into a playing style of winning games. He was kind of the definition, and that bar for a little, of what it meant to be a game manager in the NFL. Let me go out, do what my coach needs me to do, lead my guys, and just try to play as well as I can, win games, and not make mistakes. And that worked for a while. He was one of the most accurate passers in the NFL. His teammates loved him. People were unjustly comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, but they still were. And then all of a sudden, other issues start to arise. Tua can't really play in the cold. Against great teams, he starts to shrink and plays a little worse. These are things that are concerning, but that you can, you know, get around if you work on your quarterback enough and give him time to grow and improve. And then the injuries started coming in. And it was the concussions, and it was the extended missed periods of time and missed games, and the inconsistency, and it all started to add up, and Tua's career kind of just started to get a bit derailed. And we're at a point now where he wasn't a viable quarterback for Miami. He wasn't a viable starter, and he wasn't, if you're the Dolphins, after the last few seasons, you need to rebuild. You need to restart. And the first step in restarting is moving on from the quarterback that was holding you back. Now, it's not necessarily Tua's fault, because the reason that he was cut is because the Miami gave him such a huge contract. And that brings me to the second thing I wanted to talk about, which is that everybody knows that history repeats itself. A lot of people know how to recognize certain trends and patterns. And in the NFL and sports in general, there are mistakes that front offices make quite consistently that you would think they would have learned from by now. The biggest decision you can make as an NFL organization is what to do at the quarterback position. Who, if you're drafting a quarterback, which one do we draft? And if you have a quarterback, do we pay him and how much? And if you're a team, once you pay that quarterback, that's your guy for at least 3 years. And what we have noticed is that very often drafting the wrong quarterback is not always what hurts teams. Plenty of teams have drafted the wrong quarterback and been okay. You know, look at the 49ers. They traded up and then drafted Trey Lance third overall. They were okay. What hurts teams is paying the wrong quarterback. And when you have a guy who you see some promise from and you give him all the money because you get scared of what happens if you don't have a quarterback, you get screwed. And it's literally the same story every time. For these franchises that haven't had consistent play, the Giants went years at the end of the Eli Manning era struggling with quarterback play. Daniel Jones struggles. All of a sudden, one season after multiple years of mediocrity, Jones looks really good, and they give him a massive contract. It comes back to bite him. The Browns trade for Deshaun Watson after some promise, despite a lot of concerns. Give him all this money because they were scared of what happens losing that kind of quarterback. Now they're screwed. So we'll see what happens, you know, with the Packers, I guess. They gave a lot of money. The Jaguars, but I guess forget what I said about the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence is in a great spot. The point is, Jordan Love and Trevor Lawrence got $55 million deals, which is exactly how much Tua got. Now, Love and Lawrence have shown more promise than Tua has, but when you commit that much money to a player, that is your guy. And what this means for Miami now that Tua is gone is this is going to be another rebuilding year. It's going to be another bad season. And they've got $100 million from Tua on the books this year for a player that's not even on their roster. That cripples a team. It's very, very difficult to field a roster of 53 good players when you're giving that much money to a guy who isn't even there. It's what the Broncos did with Russell Wilson a couple years ago. All these big quarterback trades and acquisitions, when you're making and committing that much, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, they just cut him. We'll talk about that in a minute. All these instances, when you see a guy play for your team for multiple years and you're not sure, there's nothing wrong with franchise tagging them. There's nothing wrong with waiting it out. I know all the players want their money. They want to get it quick. The guys who deserve the money quick, you don't have to worry about paying. Make smart decisions. Speaking of, by the way, I mentioned Daniel Jones with the Giants getting that contract. He did it again. And we're watching the Indianapolis Colts play out the exact same story that the Dolphins just did, the exact same story that the Giants did. I really don't understand why. They signed Daniel Jones today to a two-year deal worth at least $88 million. Could be up to $100 million. That makes him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And I don't get it, because he tore his Achilles at the end of the season. You know he has injury concerns. He was already starting to skid again at the end of the season. And you have the history book right in front of you. If I'm talking about a team that wears blue, starts a season 7-1, wins a lot of games that they're not supposed to, late game theatrics, Daniel Jones playing better than he ever has, a superstar running back carrying him along, and then the season starts to deteriorate, you pay Daniel Jones a lot of money, and then he becomes poor with injury concerns and bad play. That's what happened with the Giants and with the Colts right now. It's literally the same script. You could describe it the same way for both teams. So, I guess we'll see how it pays out. I always cheer for Danny Dimes because I'm pulling for him and I like him as a human being. And, you know, if you're a former Giant, that's just kind of the respect you get. But I just don't understand the signing. I don't think other people were going to commit that much money to Daniel Jones. And I suppose he has shown an ability to play at a high level. He's won a playoff game. But we know for a fact that he's not one of the best quarterbacks in the league. We know for a fact that there are going to be plenty of moments of not just issue, but poor decision-making and poor play and turnovers. So, for a team that's been on the brink for a few years in Indianapolis, very even, they've been 8-9, 9-8 the last couple seasons, I am interested to see why they did what they did, because it kind of feels like they're keeping themselves in this little area of mediocrity. All right, next. Sticking with quarterbacks. We're staying on theme here. Kyler Murray got cut by Arizona. That's another guy that showed a couple flashes, had a lot of concerns, got a historic contract, and it didn't pan out. And Kyler's story is interesting, because he started as a superstar in college. He was one of the most dynamic athletes that we'd ever seen. He was a top 10 pick in the MLB draft the same year he was the number one pick in the NFL. He was drafted by the A's because he was that good at both football and baseball and that much of an athlete. Then he gets to the league, shows some promise his first year, gets banged up a couple times. All of a sudden, the next season, they start 7-0. There's a lot of real promise for the future. They make the playoffs, and then they flame out. And he's just been inconsistent since then. And what I remember distinctly was when this contract for Kyler came out, there was a clause that required him to watch a certain amount of game film, which is alarming. Because if you're an NFL quarterback, you should be watching film on your own. You should be watching other teams. You shouldn't have to be told to study and to practice. You should be going above and beyond by yourself. You should be motivating others to do the same. And if you're the team and you know that there are questions about Kyler Murray's commitment, about his dedication to football, about his ability to elevate other guys to win games, paying him that much money and kneecapping your franchise is a bad idea. But they did it anyway, because they're a losing franchise. And so for Arizona now, you have to move on, and you have to look forwards. I don't know what they'll do this offseason. I don't know what their plan is at the quarterback position. I know they're rebuilding. They've got some interesting pieces, some young guys. A Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously people want to see more out of. Michael Wilson had a great season. They've got a couple people on defense that's there to like. But for the most part, it's a roster that could really use some help and really use some development. And now that Kyler Murray is gone, they're kind of stepping into their own era of rebuilding and trying to take this team back. Actually, back to where they were in 08, I suppose. This is not a really storied franchise. On the flip side for Kyler Murray, him becoming available is really interesting. Is Kyler Murray an elite quarterback? No. Is he the kind of player to elevate a team and take them to the playoffs when they otherwise wouldn't? No. Is he good enough to the point where if you are a established team that's either trying to reshape the culture or just get a game manager in there to start winning games, can he do that? I think he can. And so there are a couple interesting landing spots for him. The one that everyone's going to look at is Minnesota. Because the Vikings have a great roster, they've got good coaching, they're well run, but they have this gaping hole at the quarterback position. Nobody really knows what's going to happen with J.J. McCarthy. Nobody really knows if the people behind them are any good, if they're going to draft a guy, if they're looking for free agents. But it was clear that quarterback was the reason that Minnesota wasn't hanging last year. And signing Kyler Murray to a contract, as long as it's not terrible, it's short-term, it's not crazy money, I think it's a good idea. At the very least, it's competition for J.J. McCarthy. You can work it out. There aren't a ton of quarterback-needy teams in the league right now. So I think that Minnesota would be a good fit. I would like to see him there. Get Justin Jefferson a dynamic quarterback and see how that plays. Speaking of receivers, couple things to note. Mike Evans has taken his talents from Tampa Bay to San Francisco, which I was very surprised about because when I heard the rumors that Mike Evans could be leaving, it shocked me. He has been a franchise player and a leader for this team for a decade. He had 11 straight seasons at 1,000 yards receiving, the most all time. He is making a case, I don't think it's a good case, but he's making a case that he is a Hall of Fame player. And to lose that in Tampa when you're kind of in the same spot you were these last few seasons, you still have Baker Mayfield, you still have Chris Godwin, you still have that running game, this defense, Todd Bowles, the infrastructure is all still there. Giving up such a big part of that locker room and that team, I don't know if it's the best idea, and I don't think it's going to really pay off for them. I guess they lost the division last year to Carolina. They kind of skidded a bit. Now they need to reset. There's a lot of promise with Emeka Egbuka, the rookie wide receiver that they drafted last season. Maybe they're thinking they want to give him the chance to step into a bigger role, and it just kind of worked out now that Mike Evans was gone. I'm not sure, but I don't think it's a great call. I just prefer when legends stay with their teams, but I do think he's going to help a lot in San Francisco, looking at it from the opposite side, and putting him with Brock Purdy, Brandon Ayuk, and Kyle Shanahan, plus that offensive line, Christian McCaffrey, everything that we know about San Francisco, I think it's going to be a great fit. I think he's going to have a really good season. And I'm interested to see what the Niners do at wide receiver the rest of the offseason, because that's going to tell you how much they're committing to Mike Evans. There's a chance he's their number one receiver next year. That's absolutely on the board. I don't know if he's talented enough to fill that role, but for a Niners team that's been looking for some, you know, higher level play from the pass catching roles, I don't think you want to roll with Juwan Jennings. Brandon Ayuk's been injured. Ricky Pearsall has been inconsistent. I think it's a really good deal for the Niners. Just makes me sad as a fan of the sport to see such an iconic player leave his long-term franchise. Another receiver that I think is going to have a big impact is DJ Moore being traded to the Buffalo Bills. And I got to tell you, I breathed a sigh of relief when I saw this news because it has been far too long since Josh Allen had a capable number one receiver. He has been the sole engine of this team for the last few years now, at least on offense. With all due respect to James Cook, he's an elite running back, but Josh Allen is that whole team. And to get him now a receiver who's fast, who has good hands, good route running, not a big problem in the locker room, he's a good leader, I think he's going to get along really well with Josh Allen personally. I think he's going to add an element to this offense that is greatly important, because now all of a sudden when you play Buffalo, yes, you're stacking the box for Allen and Cook, you're watching out because Josh has a rocket arm, but now you have a wide receiver that you have to shift coverage to, which is going to start opening things up for guys like Dalton Kincaid underneath, or Josh Cook, or James Cook as a receiver, excuse me. So I like the move a lot. I still want Buffalo to do more at receiver, bring in more guys, maybe another player on DJ Moore's caliber. If you have a Ferrari, you should be driving it fast. Like, Josh Allen is one of the best players in the NFL, one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time. Don't just send him out there with Keon Coleman. Give him the stuff he needs, the juice he needs to play at the level he can play at, to drive like he's a Ferrari. So I think it's a good deal. I'm happy for DJ Moore to get in a situation where he's not really, you know, in Chicago, they had a lot of receivers. It was a little bit of a logjam out there. And so moving DJ Moore, I think, is smart. Now all of a sudden, Roma Dunze starts to pick it up. Luther Burden is going to be a great piece, by the way. He is somebody I'm incredibly thrilled for next year. And if you're a fantasy owner or a fantasy football player, definitely keep your eye on Luther Burden. I think it's a good trade for both teams. I think both offenses are going to progress. And I think Josh Allen is going to have a really great connection with DJ Moore. All right, moving on. Geno Smith returning to, just a quick note on Geno. Geno Smith returning to the Jets. I feel bad for Geno. I think it's funny. The Jets are just such a disaster. I have no idea what their plan is. If Geno's their quarterback next year, so be it. That's not a good plan. The Jets are just going to keep tanking. It's been so long for them now, and they have so many holes in this roster. I mean, Breece Hall, they tagged. Garrett Wilson's a good receiver. They have a couple talented guys on the defensive end, but they moved Quinnen Williams. They moved Sauce Gardner this season. They're rebuilding, but they've got two first-round picks this year. They've got three first-round picks next year. They are just drowning in draft capital, clearing up cap space, and the Jets are just really resetting. I guess Geno Smith is going to be the tank commander for them. He was for the Raiders last year. I feel bad for Geno because he was really good in Seattle, and it felt like he had a Sam Darnold-esque, you know, renaissance, and now he's just back in New York. Last thing we're going to talk about before we take another quick break is Romeo Doubs to the Patriots, which isn't huge news, but the news is they gave him $20 million a year for 4 years. So a four-year deal, $70 million total. That surprised me. Because what we knew about New England was that they needed a number one. They cut Stephon Diggs. They've got good receivers, Keyshawn Booty, Pop Douglas, a lot of these other players, solid tight ends. But they need a number one. And I'm going to say the same thing about the Patriots that I said about the Bills, which is when you have a sports car, you should be driving it fast. Drake May is a great player, one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league. He's got a great deep ball. Go get a receiver that's going to play with him. Open up the rest of that offense. I get you can rely on Drake May to make the offense work and make the receivers work, even if they're not overwhelmingly talented, so you can invest the money elsewhere. But I'm telling you, if you want to take your team to the next level, if you want to establish a culture of dominance and excitement, it's what you got to do. All right, we've got about 10 minutes here left in our show. We're going to take another quick break. When we return, we are talking NBA once again.
Call Help Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help
me? All right, we are back. And we are going to do a new segment that I'm calling Podium, really quickly, where there's been a lot going on in the NBA over the last week or so, and I'm just going to throw out my podium for the guys that I want to highlight. We're going to exclude Bam from this because I spent quite a minute focusing on him. Obviously, he would be at the top of the podium wearing the gold medal and holding the trophy, celebrating and all of that. 83 points in the game. in an unbelievable manner, just so impressive. So other than Bam, starting in third place on the side of the podium is Austin Reeves, who dropped 25 points again the other night. He's been playing really well, took the Lakers to a win. The Lakers are now 18-3 in games where Austin Reeves scores at least 20, and he has really developed into such a good player. Like, he has just developed into a well-rounded player. He is a good passer. He's a good scorer. He can rebound. He's a leader on the team. He's quick. He's starting to get scrappy on the defensive end. So I'm just proud of him. It's exciting for the Lakers to have this kind of star. Him and Luka play really well together. Reeves is almost like a baby version of Luka in their play styles, where Luka's going for huge accumulations of points, rebounds, assists, and Reeves is a little behind him. But it's fun to see him play. And if this Lakers team is able to pull it together and you get higher level play from LeBron, maybe you get DeAndre Ayton actually giving effort during some games, all of a sudden the Lakers are going to be contenders. When you have Luka and you have LeBron, you've got a puncher's chance. So I'll give it to him. Second on the podium, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And what a season from Shai. Shai is becoming, right in front of our eyes, an all-time great player. He had a historic season last year, becoming the first player in a decade to win both MVP and a champion and finals MVP in the same season. And he has just been on a roll once again. 32 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds per game on a team that is the first seed in the league. It's just so impressive. If he plays enough games, people argue about the 65-game rule, whatever. If he's eligible for awards, he should be the MVP. And for a player that has now accumulated and accomplished as much as he has in such a short period of time, and he's still so young with such a young team around him, the sky's the limit. Speaking of young, and speaking of the only team that can really hold a clip to the Thunder, Victor Wembanyama. And he had a great game against Boston last night. It was an awesome one. And the Spurs have been rolling. It's so exciting. It's two opposite dynamics right now. You know, you have San Antonio last year, who was one of the worst teams in the league, who was at the bottom of the draft, and now they're the second best team in the entire NBA, according to the standings, according to wins. And for Wemby, I mean, dropping 39 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks, just another insane performance. He is such a unique player. He's an alien. And the defense is just what makes him so great. Listen, I mean, the stats are unbelievable. His last stretch of games, 4 blocks, 4 blocks, 5 blocks, 6 blocks, 4 blocks. He's a one-man army. And now on offense, he's an unstoppable force. He's shooting 36% from 3. This season, as a center, as a 7'5" center. He moves like a guard. He's hitting step-back shots. He is an alien. Jaylen Brown on the Celtics, who they, again, the Spurs just beat him last night, made a claim that he was the best two-way player in the league. And then he clarified his statement, and he said, when I say I'm the best two-way player, I'm excluding Wemby, because he's an alien. I'm the best human two-way player. So just the respect that Wemby's getting, the gravity he has on defense. He's a great player. I can't wait to see the rest of the year play out. All right, that's our podium. Obviously, Bam rests above all of them with an 83-point showing. Now we're swinging back to the NFL really quickly, because I read something today that grinded my gears a bit, which is that John Mara and Steve Tisch of the New York Giants, their owners, are officially transferring their stakes in the team to their children's trust funds. What this means is they're pretty much just guaranteeing that the team is going to remain in the family and that they're going to pass it down to their kids whenever they move on. And I like giving a football team to your kid because they definitely grew up around it, helped with it, worked in it, whatever. Keep it in your family. This feels preemptive. because there's been a lot of calls for the Giants ownership to move on, to sell the team, to redo the entire structure of the front office. There were some real scandals with Steve Tisch in the political world with some evil people he was associated with, and people were calling for him to step down and to give up his stake. Would I like to think that these men are doing it to just pass the Giants down in their family? I would. Do I believe that these two old billionaire white guys are doing this in their own interests? Yeah, I do. So I just wanted to make a point on that because I thought it was significant in the sports world. The way ownership shifts is always interesting to note, how that impacts the team, how it impacts culture, and all of it. Meanwhile, the Titans are rebuilding their culture on their own in a good way. After all these free agency moves, I kind of like Tennessee. I mean, you've got Cam Ward, who had a great year last year, and the coaching staff excites me. For the first time, it feels like we're really seeing a true embodiment of, I'm going to take the offense, you take the defense, and we'll be fine in the NFL. Because Robert Saleh is not a great offensive coach by any means. Brian Daboll is not a great defensive coach by any means. But Saleh's the head. Daboll's on the staff. They're bringing guys. They're bringing in Wandale Robinson. And now after these moves, by the way, they signed a bunch of edge rushers and defensive guys in the front seven, which changes how we think about the draft. All of a sudden, Jeremiah Love is rumored to be going to Tennessee, which would be so fascinating to see Cam Ward with a running back. I don't like drafting a running back that high, but if you're confident that that's your biggest hole and that you're ready to take that leap, I don't mind it. Get him a running game. Okay, we've got a couple minutes left here in our show, and I just want to talk about the World Baseball Classic because the USA lost a bruiser to Italy in one of the biggest upsets that we've seen, and it was bad. It was really bad. They fell down 8-0 early on. They picked up 6 more runs at the end, like just to try to make it even, the USA did, but the damage was already done. They didn't come out hot. They were resting players. I think a lot of people in the U.S. assumed that they were just going to qualify for the next round of the tournament because of other factors, but this game turned out to be what disqualified them. So, at least from this is a team that thought they were the favorites. A lot of people thought they were the favorites. USA Baseball is some of the best baseball in the world. Aaron Judge struck out at the end of the game, by the way. That's something to note as well, because he has struggled to get on base or to make contact even in the biggest spots. So, just a really disgraceful performance from the U.S. You got to hope that we get our act together and that for these next international tournaments, we're on point. We won in hockey in the Olympics. Baseball couldn't really hold up their end of the bargain. But some of the other sports are coming together. Basketball, we just won gold. Hockey, we just won gold. We've got flag football coming up in the Olympics in 28 that we're going to win gold in. You would like to see that success across fields as well, especially in baseball, America's former favorite pastime. Anyway, we've got 30 seconds left here, so we're going to wrap up our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. There's been a lot that we've talked about. I'm excited to see how Maryland comes around next year, what happens in the transfer portal, how the rest of free agency turns out, how this NBA season progresses. Thank you for listening. I've been Jack Wynn. You've been listening to Winning Time here on WMUC FM Radio in College Park.